Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Grey Leopard Code with Gary Norris Gray. Gary will be coming to you each Saturday, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, talking sports live on GLC.
To honor America, especially the brave men and women serving our nation in the Persian Gulf and throughout the world, please join in the singing of our national anthem. The anthem will be followed by a flyover of F-16 jets from the 56th Tactical Training Wing at MacDill Air Force Base and will be performed by the Florida Orchestra under the direction of Maestro Yaha Ling and sung by Grammy Award winner Whitney Houston.
Oh, I want a little bit of
it to me. It ain't nothing but a heartbreaker. I got one friend that's the Undertaker.
Leave tonight, leave it, die this way. Should win the MEAZ title Tuesday. And the NBC South Dakota Jackrabbits traveled to Youngstown, the Youngstown Penguins. There's the Lookies. Hanging in there. Traveled to North Dakota State, North Dakota State Bison. Both schools are 7-3. Lincoln traveled to 4 a.m. Riders is awake. Lincoln, California, Oakland, California. 4 a.m. Riders, and they can take a solid lead in the Swank Conference. Ron Washington gets another chance of passing. And I'm aiming with 2-year contracts. Man, this team is messed up from top to bottom. Ron has a very big job to fill. It's payback time in the NHL. As the Washington Capitals defeat the Devils 4-2. Toronto defeat Western Bowl Calgary in overtime 5-4. The Panthers come home and defeat Canada 5-2. On Carter AK goal third period. The Buffalo Sabres are the Minnesota Wilds 3-2. On a Parinka goal in the third period. The Sharks, San Jose Sharks play the Golden Knights for a second time in the season already. And the Golden Knights of Vegas blew them out by nothing. It was a 2-0 game until the third period, and they had too many penalties by the Sharks. And the Knights capitalized with a 5-0 win. Flyers continue their Southern California journey with the new and improved Anaheim Ducks, but they beat the Ducks 6-3. They wild third period on the pond. Game today, Dallas at Winnipeg, and Philadelphia is at the LA Kings. NBA last night, Brown and Dave keep Boston Celtics on track. They beat the Brooklyn Nets 121-107. Philadelphia keep the pedal to the metal as they win 114-106. And now the Sixers are 7-1. Doncic and Irving beat up the LA Clippers. And Dallas wins 144-126. And the Clippers are 0-3 with James Harden. The Clippers have not played defense since Harden has come to LA. The Lakers play their first playing tournament game against the Phoenix Suns. LeBron gets 32 points. Durant gets 38 points for the Suns. Lakers win 122-119. Game today. Cleveland at Golden State. Milwaukee's at Orlando. Toronto's at Boston, Miami's at Atlanta. WTA in the Billie Jean King Classic Tournament. Semis in Slovenia against Italy and the Czech Republic against Canada. In the Moselle semifinal, Borigny of Italy to be And Ivan Djokovic takes another indoor championship in the Paris Championship. Another trophy in his case. PGA. Sweden NORAD leads America more by 2 strokes on moving day. As in in Japan.
Thank you.
very quiet. We all know why. Of all the groups in the United States, the Americans are the most economically challenged in this country. Therefore, we don't get laws that need to be implemented. And they get looked over many times. It's literally being rectified, but it's going to take a while. I knew to be USC football fired the defensive coordinator after late was the Husky loss 52-42. And luckily they got away with a week earlier with the victory over the Cal Bears. And the Cal Bears missed the extra points and chosen to win that game. They would be two victories down if they go overtime Monday. New York Giants quarterback Daniel Twinkle Toes Jones is out for the rest of the year. Torn ACL and Raiders loss. Giants also lose Tyrod Taylor for at least 3 weeks. Giants are met a complete disaster area. And it goes for the quarterback down. Mets hire Carlos Mendoza as the new manager. The Cleveland Guardians hire Steve Vogt as the new manager. And the Cubs hire Craig Kessler as the manager. So there's only one spot left in the managerial situation. And that's the San Diego Padres. Farmers hire Pete Bennett, the president of the Rays. As the baseball's ice stove league gets started by this month. And there will be more trades to hire the buyers in November and December. NCAA basketball starts this week, as I already told you. James Madison University beats Michigan State. My basketball side by Colorado upsets LSU on the women's side. And what's happening now is as colleges get stronger, more level playing field, and that's why you see this. Carson Wentz, moving back up to Matthew Stafford with the L.A. Rams. I'm not going to repeat what Michael said, but I believe what Michael's right. Welcome to the club. And Jane Madison write a letter to the NCAA executive decision. And they want to get a bullpen, and they might not get one. At 9-0. Surprise, surprise, surprise. The San Jose starts with their first game over the Philadelphia Flyers. And they did it in fashion, strong defense. The Flyers came back and beat the LA Kings that night. Wednesday, the Clippers lost that game hard versus the Brooklyn Nets. Thursday, the a starting quarterback against the Dallas Cowboys. They have the news of the week. That Cowboy tie game to be interesting. If the Cowboys have any trouble at all, they're going to be looking at somebody.
Publicity.
Nope.
Not getting much attention.
Nope.
But that's maybe a process. You know, Black History Month, of course, the month of February took a while getting some traction also. And as you have many times commented, it's the shortest month of the year to give attention to Black History. But what I want to talk about in that vein of Black History is Ron Washington getting the job to manage the Texas Rangers.
Yes,
and there's been some comments about his age, but he seems to have 71, 72 or so. Seems to have the age of a much, much younger man, the enthusiasm of a much, much younger man for the game. And, you know, my assertion is, you know, with modern science, nutrition, good living, healthful living, things like that, 70 is not what it used to be. 70 may be 40 or 50, depending on how you take care of yourselves. And it's an opportunity for Washington, as I see it. He's going into it with his eyes open. He's going into a team that historically has underperformed. But that's no secret to him. He knows what he's getting into. And I know you and I have spoken about this, and you feel he's, you know, stepping in to try to clean the Angels' mess. And if he's not, because of circumstances outside of his control, it's going to fall back on him. But again, he knows that. He's going in with his eyes open, and I think it's an opportunity for him, with his love of the game and his love of fundamentals, to get in here on the ground level and see if he can't turn this team around.
The California Angels, California, and I'm Los Angeles, whatever you want to call them, are the worst team available. I mean, the worst team in baseball. And I can understand it. It was on the field. But it's not on the field. It's in the executive office where trouble is. Now, Dusty Baker, about 6 years ago, took over the Houston Astros. When he did that, the Astros administration said, okay, we will assist you to get to a championship. The California Angels, California Los Angeles Anaheim Angels, did not say that. Now, I guess you and I have said that. Then they make a call. My wife, I'm glad he did, because I'm glad he said that, because I'm Ron Watson. I'm not working for the Angels. And the reason why I'm not doing it is because of the upper management trouble. I'm not doing it because I don't know if they're going to support me. If I say I need a pitcher, or I need a batter, I want you to go get that batter. The Houston Astros did that for Dusty Baker. Will the Anaheim Angels do that for Ron Washington? I don't know.
Well, I'm going to guess that Ron Washington certainly asked that question of the Angels. Did not go into this with his eyes closed and his fingers crossed, simply hoping for the best. You know, and they seem to have the other thing. I want to talk about this a little bit. What's different here is you often talk about the revolving door where the same old people get recycled through, and there was some talk of Buck Showalter getting this job. Again, old boy network, you know, same old guy being recycled through.
They won't be moved. They won't be. Yeah, go ahead.
But again, that didn't happen. The Angels made a decision, too. We don't want to go in the same old recycled direction. And it may be a breath of fresh air. And let me draw an analogy, perhaps, to the football team that's across the freeway in Los Angeles. Well, yeah, beyond Los Angeles now, in Las Vegas.
Across the state. You mean
across the
state
line. Where for all their misgivings, their bad hires, their bad firings, they cleaned house in one weekend. They saw McDaniels and company was not the second coming of Bill Belichick, who himself has now been exposed as a paper tiger, cleaned house and said, we need something new. We need to go in a completely new direction here. And they did. And maybe, you know, what the angels are doing here, too, is they're saying, no, it's time to stop this revolving door and bring in Ron Washington. Give Washington the chance that he's been waiting for, that he deserves, that he's earned. And even if we have a crummy team and a young team and an experienced team, there's plenty of videos of Ron Washington on his hands and knees throwing ground balls to fielders to teach them his method of fielding. I can't remember seeing any other coach or manager coaching at that level of fundamentals, literally on your hands and knees, working with them like they're babies in a crib to build them up.
Well, Ron wants to ask what to do. God bless him, because Gary Gray would not be with the California Indians because of their past. My thing is, what do you do with Joey Ohtani? Do you trade Joey Ohtani? They get draft traded. Do you keep Joey Ohtani because he's an asset, a double asset? Because
isn't he at the end of his contract?
What do you do with Joey Ohtani?
Well, he's at the end of his contract. It's his decision. It's his decision to make now.
No, but they can trade him and get traded back. This year, they do it.
Ohtani, it may be an opportunity here to show Ohtani, who got saddled into a not very good team, you know, a guy with, you know, superlative two-way skills, who's maybe wondering, you know, God, what was my bad misfortune to get stuck with these guys? But to show him a different message, saying, look, this is, you know, this is the breath of fresh air that we're bringing in. This is the way we're going to do business.
That might have been the case. You may have a point there. I think that's a good point because Joey was not very happy with the Angels. And he was even thinking about, God forbid him, he was thinking about going across the city to the LA Dodgers. He's not leaving LA. Because of the easy access to flight to Japan. He wants to be close to Japan as possible, which means things like Seattle, San Francisco. That's about it. Maybe Colorado, but he wasn't there.
Yeah, he's not going to go to. I don't see him going to a cold weather city.
No, he's not. He's not doing it.
Right.
The only two teams I can see is Seattle and the Dodgers, that's it. Because the Giants are not going to spend the money to get him. They're not going to do it. The Giants are cheap. They don't want to do it. That's the whole conversation in itself about the Giants.
Right. The San Francisco Giants.
Yeah, they were good.
Yeah, Yeah. No, they're...
That's a whole different conversation altogether.
Yeah, they're cheap, and as much as San Francisco is thought to be a liberal and progressive city, the management is really not liberal and progressive. In fact, one of their majority owners, the guy Charles Johnson, is a major, major donor to some of the most right-wing elements in American politics.
Well, and they're also cheap. They're cheap games. They want to win. You can't do that.
Right.
They did it 1-2 years ago, but they don't want to spend money for the gun.
Right.
Very simple.
You know, but then they make the charade. I believe they were ready. I believe their money was on the table to try to get Aaron Judge. But, you know, that was just kind of a show. They can say, you know, look at what we did. We were ready to pay for Judge, yeah, but you weren't ready really to pay for anybody else. So what?
And to me, the judge gave told me exactly what they were about. I said, okay, this is what this team is about. I'm a director. That's what they are. So getting back to Ron Washington, I wish him well. I hope Anaheim gets back in the race. We will see. There's only one opening left in baseball, and one at the San Diego Padres. What do they do next?
Yeah.
The Padres.
Washington's an amazing baseball story. He's been around forever, and he still has such enthusiasm for the game.
Ernie Banks would play baseball morning, noon, and night. Ernie Banks would wake up and say, let's play two, okay?
Right.
This is what I wanted, the same thing.
Right. He's got a very simple orientation of the game. It's like, you know.
Then he makes another game. Dusty Baker. You know why he resigns? And this may be so bad. I was so bad about this. Dusty Baker resigned from the Houston Texans because of the media and online harassment. He said, I don't need this. I'll see you guys later. Now, baseball is a great personality because of the nonsense. You know, I mean, Houston could have done better than that, but they didn't even listen to this nonsense. I was just appalled when I heard that. He resigned not because of baseball reasons, but because of outside influences. Then come on, man.
Right. Well, to their credit, they've brought him up to the front office.
Yeah. All right, what else you got?
That's all I got. I'm done.
You're on your own now.
I got you through that that little gap there from 120 to 150. So now you're on your own. You got to let your posse come in and ride to the rescue now.
You did my word.
Well, it is your word. That's your slogan. That's your go-to whenever you were offended by something. I'm done. You got two phases, Gary. One is I'm tired. I'm getting tired. Then I'm tired, and then I'm done.
So
the dead man, the dead energized, the day there.
They have the same problems as any renter. You know, if the boiler's out, can't fix it. But that's it. You know, it's like, don't ask for nothing from us other than what you expect. As a renter, you can expect, but we'll have the facility open for you when it's game time. When there's butts to put in the seats, we'll be there. But other than that, don't ask us for shit.
HBCUs. It's coming to the end of the football season. Any surprises? North Carolina Central Eagles or Fairview Rattlers or?
I can't say there's no surprises, but you know, I'm glad you brought that up. I said, let me check that, because this is an HBCU story as much as it is a college football story.
Yeah.
Now, we've been following Colorado since the season.
Uh-huh.
Colorado won one game last year.
Yeah, they did.
Okay. As we speak right now, it's 31-31, and if they win, they'll be 5-5. And there's an outside possibility they win the next game after that, they'll be bowl eligible. But, you know, there's always that but. But. Seriously, but the fact remains that we have coaches at the HBCUs, the John Merritts, the Earl Banks, Coach Rob, all these guys back in the day who had big, bad teams, and the white schools didn't want to play them because they knew there was a possibility
to
get their ass whipped. That's right.
I got to tell you this story. At the end, I got to tell you this story. My dad told me about North Carolina.
All right. But again, here you got Dion and Colorado with an outside shot to do something. Now, you can hate Dion if you want. You can say he's showy. It's all about him. But he played. He played, and he played well. He played so well, he's in the Hall of Fame. And you don't get into the Hall of Fame on a pass. So we know he knows football. And the fact that he's able to translate that and get some of his charges to learn is another story. However, there's a LeBron factor to this. Now, you as well as I do know that my man LeBron is the cash cow. But even with all that, there's been a harshness to Mr. Sanders and his efforts. There are forces who will say to Dion, yeah, we'd like to get that smart ass and put him in his place, feed him some serious humble pie. Of a 1-10 team last year, that's possible. Yeah, he will eat some humble pie. But he's won 4 games, which is more than what was expected, more than what was predicted. And there's an outside shot. He'll go to postseason. Now, the next year, if anybody had a chance to get him, this is the year to get him. Because next year, it ain't happening. Next year,
they're gonna be ready to bear this year because
next year he's gonna be ass kicking because he will have followed through on the lesson of the great black coaches. It's like I'm gonna whip your ass. You know, in the days of mobile, agile, and white schools that not want to play these guys, they'll give you the excuse that it was a level of competition thing, but it wasn't a level of competition. It was the fact that they didn't want to get butthurt, get beat by a black school. It's like somebody in the neighborhood saying, you got beat by a girl. And really, all these things are in front of Deion and the Colorado team. And I'm hoping that they do win the game. However, we always know there's another level that we look at. Just like you were talking about your Giants and how they get looked at. Giants are there. As my man Tony likes to say, they're made men. They're pros. They can lose for 20 years. They can lose for 20 years, and maybe somebody will send up an airplane with a message saying, 20 years of lousy football, we've had enough. And that'll be about the end of it. People will still buy tickets. People will still buy their product. That's the problem.
Now, I want to tell you a story my dad told me about North Carolina A&T.
Okay.
And North Carolina, University of North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
In 1948, 49, that year.
Right.
North Carolina, that we'll play you. We'll play you a game. North Carolina said, okay, we'll play. Michael? A&T had them 21-0 at halftime. They had three starters get hurt. Three guys that got hurt. You know what they did at halftime?
What?
They had a meeting with referees. A&T won the game 43-40. And they were down by 20 points. The Tigers were down by 23 points.
Okay.
And they won the game. A&T won the game by 3. Guess what, Michael?
What?
Tigers never played the Aggies. Ever again.
Well, I knew that. I expected
ever.
Yeah. Why would they play? There's nothing in them for them. That's like with Appalachian State upset Michigan. Nobody expected it.
Nope. And they got blamed for overdoing it.
Yeah, exactly. Appalachian State wins the game. Are we going to play it again? Oh, hell no. We don't want no fucking problem, these guys. But you know how much they cost them. Seriously, let's look at actual cost. Michigan is always in the top 10, right? Or they always aspire to be. All right, Appalachian State was nowhere to be found in the rankings. When they played, the odds of them winning was slim the fuck off. And this is without betting and all the other things that go into it. This is one of those games where they would have gave Michigan 35 points, and it would have been a bet in terms of, oh, yeah, I'll take that bet. But Appalachian State shut them up. That one game, they beat them. Now, they may have made $1 million to be the victim du jour, but they cost Michigan 10 times that much.
And they did. Michigan still talking about it 30 years later.
Of course they do. Of course they do. Because it was about, as my man Fred likes to say, sports entertainment. There was like $10 million on the line in a bowl game. And Appalachian State killed it in one weekend. Any kind of hype, any kind of politics with the referees, anything that has nothing to do with the actual playing of the game, all the little side bets, all the asides, Michigan was screwed because Armani Edwards and Appalachian State beat them.
Yeah, yeah. Michael, did you see the Penn State Michigan game today?
I saw a little bit of it.
All right. Did you see that? Did you see the interview with the black coach?
No, I didn't.
I don't know how to put this. This guy was crying at the end of the game and called for Jim Harbaugh. I said, wait a minute, what are you doing?
There's no crying in football.
What are you doing? He's crying at the end of the game. He is crying at the end of the game. Get out of here. I'm like, you're the head coach. You won the game. What is wrong with you?
Big guy, this is Franklin, the Penn State coach, right? Oh, my God. I didn't know that.
No, the Michigan head coach.
It was Harbaugh?
No, it was a black guy who took over for Harbaugh today.
Oh, for goodness sake.
At the end of the game, he said, oh, my coach is going to make so much money. Get out of here!
Oh, unbelievable.
I turned the TV off, right? So I started to say, hey, what's this?
I'll blame.
And see, this is what they wanted him to do. He did exactly what he wanted him to do. He won the game. You're supposed to win the game. That's what you're supposed to do. We got Tony in the mix. Tony, you see the end of the Michigan
Well, apparently he was actually crying because he didn't have the over. So I think it's understandable.
I'm glad you explained it to me.
Full disclosure, I did not watch the game. I was tempted to because of all the hoopla and whatever, but they're a little. I guess they're a little sensitive down there in Ann Arbor, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, Ben, they didn't win that game. They didn't cry in the end zone.
Yeah, Franklin's had his problems with Ohio State and Michigan, and even though everybody sort of plays nice, he gets sort of the Mike Tomlin treatment down there in Happy Valley. Even in his success, there's still a lot of folks that, I mean, let's put it this way. Mike Tomlin's been fired about 878 times over the last
few years.
He's probably up there in, like, say, the 560 range it's interesting. I mean, to be honest with you, I thought he got off light. You know, would they give him 3 weeks? I mean, I'm not saying they could have fired. I'm not saying they should have taken his job away, but they could have very easily said the year, the rest of the season, if they really wanted to.
This is why I get upset with the NCAA. You know these guys are doing it. Every team is doing this.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter how they're doing it. Every team is doing this. Really, I've seen it here and now. So, what did Michigan do that other teams did not do?
No, they got caught.
Basically.
And you know what, Gary? Gary, to be fair, This was not an NCAA thing. This was the Big Ten, the conference actually. I get what you're saying in that, but it is kind of interesting that you know folks can play the holier than thou thing.
Yes.
You know, because like that, whenever stuff like this always happens, I'm always reminded. Now you're seeing a lot of a Michigan alumni, basically playing the martyr role in regards to this. But I'm always reminded of how folks reacted to the quote unquote Astros scandal. And, you know, how they basically wanted them removed from the face of the earth and all that other stuff. And we all remember whose faces they put out there as the faces of the scandal. Here's the thing here where, you know, you had people, you know, defending Harbaugh to an extent.
Okay. Gary Gray, Sports Network, Harbaugh never should have got suspended in the first place because he wouldn't do it. I don't think he did anything wrong.
Now the deal was they basically hired a guy to go and, like, go to visiting games to, like, take the team's games or see, that's,
oh,
you know, I'm guessing that's something that's written into the conference bylaw. I mean, is it documentation that's written in the conference?
Yeah, you cannot go, all right, and see, this is why I don't think you did anything wrong. Go to the games and write down stuff, but you can't tape it or you can't film it.
Okay.
I'm like, what's the difference?
Yeah, it's, you know, at the very least, it seems kind of vague. Just the whole, you know.
Yes.
I mean, the whole implication is that they cheated, and I'm just going by the letter, by the letter of the law. At least what they're trying to say. We've been getting all, I don't know if you guys feel the same way. It seems like it's been a mixed signals sort of thing. And now, look, I'm no Jim Harbaugh fan. I think, quite honestly, he's a great recruiter, but he ain't the greatest head coach in the world. But, you know, that's another two Kool-Aid drink conversation in and of itself.
Uh-huh.
But I guess I need to know a little bit more because if even their rules are sort of vague, then why were they so quick to jump on them? I guess that's the biggest question here.
Well, I think and this has been a horrible thing because he was out here too. He did some greedy thing out here too. So it's typical Harbaugh style.
Well, you know, it's not like it's, you know, to be honest, you know, it's not like it's helped him win a whole bunch of games if he's been doing it for a while.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, I mean, there are just, they got to the playoff for the first time, was it last year, a couple of years ago, I guess it was?
Yep.
Yeah, it's, and, you know, they can, I mean, look, their season basically is always comes down to them and Ohio State, and for the most part, he struggled against Ohio State. As a coach, as a coach. Now, as a player, I believe he had a winning record against them the years that he played. You know, it's end of the day, I sort of look at it as how we looked at the golf scandal between the PGA and the LIV folks. You know, rich white guys arguing with other rich white guys, and it's like, settle it amongst yourself. I mean, I'll watch HBCU sports. Thank you very, very much.
Dueling golf courts with dirty papers.
Oh man, God, Colorado just missed the field goal.
Yes, they did.
Hey, he's been up and down all year though, to be quite honest.
Let me punctuate Tony's point. The fact that Harbaugh did what he did with Michigan adds to what Appalachian State did years ago. There's still effect from the upset. Now, they say, oh, it's just another game, but that was not just another game. You know, if they lose to Ohio State, they're like, all right, we lose to Ohio State. They expect that. They didn't expect to lose to a small school. And if they lost to a black school, it would be even worse. That's why this thing matters so much. What is what happens to that side between Colorado and Arizona? The bottom line is, if he's going to coach another year, if he does coach another year, he's got to put these boys in such a shape that they're going to be mobile, agile, and hostile, emphasize hostile, for the remainder of his contract there. And other coaches, other black coaches, you get the same vibe from this. They've got to have a football business, football ass, and take the models wrong and everything else with it, because there's no middle ground for it. You don't do mediocre. You have to kick somebody's ass. It's a moral imperative. And as good as he was as a pro, his players have to be just as good as college players if they're going to get taken seriously. Fuck all the hype and hit my theme music and all the BS that goes with that. But as far as Michigan is concerned, they're pissed. That game, that score will never change. It'll always be Appalachian State 36, Michigan 35, and they will be suffering for all time because of it.
Well, the Arizona Wildcats just responded in kind, and they go down to the 12-yard line with time running out. Man, is the other? Yeah, man. He threw a 50-yard bomb. And these guys will win by 3 points. The woman is rare in the Arizona and Colorado.
I'm not sure. It's early in the game, though, isn't it?
No, it's late.
It's a minute to go in the game.
Oh, wow, in Arizona? Wow, they started that game early.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah, because like I was thinking that was like say a 4 o'clock or a 4:30.
It was a noon game.
Oh, they changed it for TV.
Yeah, it was a noon game right here.
Oh, okay.
I will tell you guys. I will tell you football game. As crazy as it's gotten.
Yeah, well, it's College Football Saturday. That's part. I mean, that's part for the course now. Considering all, you got to remember, you have all, you know, the more networks, the more networks, and all the other more. Oh yeah, that's a factor. That's a factor as well. I mean, the way it look. There, you got to remember, you can make the argument that college football in certain parts of the country is bigger than the NFL. Because of the fan, you know, what is it they say when the big house in Ann Arbor is full those 4 or 5 Saturdays of the year, they're basically like they're basically like the 51st the 52nd state of the union.
As you had the whole game, that whole area is swelling up like a balloon.
Sure. Look, college football has always, you know, it doesn't matter literally what part of the country. There's always going to be big time, college football, college basketball, now that it's just started as well. College sports in a lot of places. I mean, you know, we were talking about Penn State. I mean, you wouldn't be able to put a quote unquote pro franchise in Happy Valley, so to speak, or I guess it's considered state college PA, because everything is about Penn State. You go to different parts of the country here. Football, college sports, whether it be football or basketball, is king. And the thing about it is, now that they what's funny to me now is that now, I mean, it's always been a big moneymaker. That's always been there. But now the parameters are so bigger now because of the different networks and whatever. Talking from back in the day, we probably have gone from maybe seeing on a given Saturday maybe 3 or 4 games on at a certain time, where if you throw network, cable, and streaming, you're talking about maybe you have basically the ability to watch upwards of, say, 40 to 50 games
easy
on a given Saturday.
Easy.
Yeah.
I need to know what this bet is, because these guys are playing around with this game.
It's been like that for a while. It's just that now you have more. The biggest difference now is that there's more networks and there's more ways to watch. You know, we talk about how, look at what's happened with HBCU football over the last 3-4 years. You know, it was, we've gone from maybe like saying 1, maybe 2 games a week. Now, you know, there's about 7 or 8 upwards. You know, if you have certain packages or what have you, you could watch HBCU football pretty much most of the day on Saturdays. Now, that's just HBCUs. Imagine, we haven't even talked about the, for lack of a better word, the Division I white schools. And they already had a monopoly on top of that. You got to remember, you didn't have the SEC network or the Big Ten network or the Pac-12 network or the big, you know, you didn't have all those networks. It wasn't even like 20 years ago that you had that. Remember, and it's ironic that Mike spoke on the Appalachian State-Michigan game, because that was the first sporting event, or sorry, be more specific, that was the first live football game on the Big Ten Network. That's how the Big Ten debuted.
Right.
That's how the Big Ten debuted.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I remember because it was early. See, out here it was early in the morning because it was a morning game.
Yeah, noon start. It was a noon start. That was a noon start.
It was 9 a.m. here.
I remember
I was eating my breakfast and I said, look at this.
That was supposed to have been a quote unquote money game. Well, yeah, it was. You know, Appalachian State basically said, oh yeah, we'll take your money. We'll beat your ass too while we're at it. Might as well.
Think of it this way.
The Big 12, Big 10, basically, I believe they do about four games every Saturday, usually a couple during the day, a couple at night. Matter of fact, they've had like Friday games as well, 8 o'clock, 8 o'clock Friday night games as well. Look, the supply and demand, folks are going to watch those games and see even the quote unquote mid majors. You see games now on not just Thursday and Friday nights. You see stuff during the week on like Wednesday night. You know, at one point, I forget which conference it was, they had games on Tuesday night because there was a stretch a couple of years ago where there was, you know, and this was before the NFL basically played every game. You had that season, I think it was the COVID year, where there was an NFL game basically every night of the week due to either cancellations, COVID, or what have you. But see, the colleges have been doing that for a while. And a lot of it was somewhat, I want to say out of necessity, but a lot of those small or quote-unquote mid-major conferences, they said, you know what? Somebody came to them and basically said, I guess it was the mouse, they said, look, we can put you on during the week and y'all will be exclusive. And they said, why the hell not? I mean, even the NFL Network now has college games on Saturdays.
True.
Bulletin. Where 2 seconds left to go in the game, the Arizona Cardinals kick the field goal and win the game 34-31.
Not Arizona Cardinals, the Arizona Wildcats.
That's a Wildcat. Okay. The Cardinals wish they could score 31 points.
Yeah, no kidding. But you know, now that makes Colorado 4-6. There's no way they can get to 500.
No.
And unfortunately for Deion, they're going to have to deal with the reality that everybody enjoyed putting their foot on their neck and pressing down on it. Now,
you know,
next
week. You know what? I believe it to myself. It's Stanford game. They had that Stanford game. And let it get away. That was the game. And that was the one. I think that was the one to turn the tide with his team.
Well, and also, you know, to be fair, if we're going to look at the whole picture, the defense has gotten progressively worse over the year. So he already knows what he's got to work on. He's got to bring in some good defensive players, because if they had at least had a bend but don't break defense, they'd finish 500 possibly.
Okay, gentlemen, we have a scenario here. Well, I would say Georgia, Michigan, Florida State, and Wagner are all undefeated.
Mm-hmm.
Under the playoffs,
It'll Gary, trust. Not all of them are not. All of them are not going to finish undefeated.
Right.
You watch. They won't.
They do. All five of them.
No, they won't. But see, they won't. You know, and I don't say that to be arrogant or whatever. It's not going to happen. They're not. Not all. You're not going to get five. You know, you're going to get 14 that'll probably finish undefeated. I don't think all of them will finish undefeated. I'm not sure which one is more likely to not be under, but I don't think they'll all finish
under. You talk to me the one day, over one day.
Sure.
I need to play the Utah. I'm not sure, but.
That's the ABC game tonight, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think so.
It's a late game.
See, we don't get the news out here.
Benedict has basically owned the SIAC the last 2 years. They've been, you know, arguably they've been one of the, you know, with all the hype that Jackson State has gotten over the years, to be quite honest, Benedict College has probably been just as good, if not a bit better, in winning the SIAC, going undefeated in the conference and everything else. And I believe they won a playoff game. I could be wrong. But, the CIAA championship game is going on as we speak, as is the SIAC. You know, they play up against each other.
Is it early?
Yeah, both championship games are this weekend. Union and Fayetteville for the CIAA, and Benedict and who's Benedict playing? I have forgotten. I want to say Benedict and maybe Albany State.
I think it's Miles.
Yes, it's one of them. I know that Benedict College is playing for another SIAC championship, and I think they're also trying to hopefully to get a higher seed when the parents come out, which I believe come out tomorrow. I'm guessing tomorrow. But
SIU is losing again. I'm gonna kick their butt too. It's pissing me off.
This is that time of the year where the pretenders and the contenders are separated. So you know we'll see.
SIU has the no black quarterback syndrome too. That's part of the problem too.
Speaking of pretenders, where did this other black athlete sports network come from?
Yeah, I didn't. I know flattery is supposed to be the kindest form of whatever, but you know, it's kind of weird. It's kind of weird to me. Well, it's funny to say it's black. See, they go by Black Athletes Sports Network instead of Black Athlete. I guess that S makes a difference from what I can gather. But,
yeah, where did that come from?
I have no idea. I know that put it this way. I worry more about BASN Newsroom. I mean,
I was surprised to see it.
Yeah. Well, you know.
Who they?
Yeah, I know, exactly. Yeah, so, you know, I was just like, geez, you know, nobody's got anything better to do than to imitate us.
For real.
Also, another one. Being as in Chicago.
BASN?
Yeah.
BASN Newsroom?
No. BASN Magazine for Network in Chicago.
I'll put it like this, and I usually don't, you know, put our business out here out there. You know, everybody knows that we were all with Black Athlete Sports Network for many, many, many years under the late Roland Rogers. When Roland passed away, I believe the domain name was taken by his relatives. Not to, you know, whatever, but we tried to be a part, to maintain a part of that, but we were told that, in a sense, our services were no longer wanted, or they didn't want to get together with us, and that's why
but
we
came up. But they wanted our content.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But to make a long story short, that's one of the
reasons. One of our members,
And see, Gary, this is one of the reasons why I don't like to air out our stuff out in the public, because there's enough, you know, it's let's put it this way. We're BASN Newsroom, as far as I'm concerned. You know, there's always going to be, because there's some sort of whatever in regards to the domain name, every Tom, Dick, and Jehoshaphat can grab the domain name, apparently. And as far as I'm concerned, more power to them. God bless them. But I'm not worried, I'm going to finish my sandwich and look at we've carved our little niche with BASN Newsroom, and I'm very, very comfortable with that. And it's a non-issue as far as I'm concerned. It's yesterday's news, and I don't, whoever still has it and still does it, hey, more power to them. But we've moved on from that.
Michael Lewis Ingram. It's been 11 games now, and that's the Hockey League. And the Boston Bruins are doing it again. How are they doing this?
Well, Boston has the luxury of three players in Bergeron, Pasternak, and who is that little fucker? I can't. He annoys the fuck out of me. But
is it Krejci?
There was a Krejci, Bergeron, Pasternak, and
the old guys, right?
But anyway, as I wanted to say, their rhythm together is a thing of beauty. Time is caught up with them, and, they're going to have to change up. But that was their strength. They made the other lines effective because they made the others understand how important it was to be in certain spots when they cycled, when they played. Everybody knew what the other player was going to do. If they didn't, they sure seemed like they knew. And it made Boston all that more annoying because, in addition to their physicality, they were a very skilled hockey team.
And Gary, let's be honest, it's early. I mean, for hockey, it's way, way early. Because didn't Boston have the best record last year and then proceeded to get knocked out in the first round by Florida?
They sure did.
There you go. I mean, most of the time when I'm watching hockey, it's the late games. I actually watched a little bit of, I think it was Edmonton and Vancouver the other night.
Yeah, I always catch Edmonton. I don't know why.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Evander Kane, of course. Evander Kane and among them. And, I've caught the Islanders a couple of times. I knew that they would be struggling this year with the way that they were going. But with hockey, yeah, it's nice to be able to turn on a game or whatever, but I literally, after the All-Star break, then maybe it's whatever. I mean, yeah, it's cool that basically you got all four major sports going on. I think I've watched maybe even like with the winter sports. I'll check in on a game. I watched the Knicks beat up the LA Hardens the other night. So
That's crazy. But he's an equal opportunity destructor. I don't like the way he plays.
Well, it's the thing of look. We've seen guys, play for different teams over the years and what have you, but there's a manipulativeness about with Harden is that, I don't think he's. I mean, yes, he's been MVP. He's been an MVP. He's been to the he's been to a final. But see, here's the thing. A lot of what keeps him relevant is his past stuff. I mean, he's basically on his what? This is his fourth team in the last 6 years now. He's a nomad. And see, is it any coincidence that every one of those teams after he left became, with the exception probably of Houston, they became better once he left town?
The Sixers look really good.
One of the biggest early season stories in the NBA, and again, it's very, very early, Ben Simmons is – there's been a Ben Simmons sighting. Ben Simmons is that, everybody has theorized what was going on. Clearly there was something going on off the court with him, and it clearly affected what he was doing on the court.
Last year, the Warriors could not win a road game. They could not buy a road game. Well, we know what the problem was.
Well, there's a lot, the NBA is one of those leagues where home field does mean something. So they've been able to overcome that for the most part over the years. That's why they have the championships. But, I do, with this time, to be quite honest, now that at least college basketball has stuff, I'll probably wind up watching more college hoops than I will pro hoops at this time of the year, because it's just a lot more fun. Now, granted, they have their money games too. I see how UConn beat up on Stonehill today. Stonehill and no, it's not a school out of Bedrock. It's funny. They actually played in the old conference that my alma mater, my college alma mater, Southern Connecticut State University, used to play in. Used to be called the Northeast Conference, the Northeast Collegiate Conference. The neck, as they used to call it. It was the funny thing was this had. There's actually been a handful of schools from that old conference that have gone Division I, and Stonehill is one of them. Stonehill, I think, has only been Division I for a hot minute now. Okay. But being the baseball fan that I am, it's sort of a dead time for me because I have to admit it. If it wasn't for the Field Generals, I probably would not be watching the NFL. To be quite honest, it's the NFL. The NFL to me is a tough watch. It's a real tough watch for me. Now seeing what Josh Dobbs and C.J. Stroud was able to do last week, that was fun. That reminded me of like old, dare I say it, old time football. That was fun to watch. And when you know the story behind it, especially the one with Dobbs, where he literally got off of a plane and started running the offense, for lack of a better word. And see, here's the scary thing with Minnesota. He did that without their best receiver. Jefferson.
He did it without Jefferson.
Yeah. So if they, if he's able to stay in an upright position for a little bit, maybe they win that division. And
we'll hold up a second, because let's not gloss over your point. You always talk about innovative in addition to being imitated. Josh Dobbs was the personification of innovation. I mean, he had no time in which to do this. There were no expectations of anything he was going to do that would be positive. And he did it. He did it with zero room for error and won a game. And what are they going to say? He's a superior athlete? No. They should say he was smarter. And he figured the scheme and outsmarted the opposition. But they'll never say that. Tell me, and I'm talking about all of us now. We've got a combined 90 years experience. Tell me, anytime you've seen a headline where it said a black athlete outsmarted the white one?
Yeah, I'll wait. Yeah. There's a better, if it is said, it's done literally begrudgingly. If it's said at all. I mentioned this the other night on your show. That's been the one great thing about watching this year's edition of the Field Generals, is that you are literally getting all different, variations. You're getting guys like Dobbs, who's never really been given an opportunity, but now that he's got one, he's run with it. you're seeing these new, you're seeing the new kids like, you know, Stroud and Richardson before he got hurt. And even with, and even with the struggles of Young, you could see where if they just put a little bit of a, some talent around him, he'll be fine. He'll be fine. It's just, it's just that, that, you know, that, 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 you know, it's easy to say, oh, they should have drafted Stroud instead. I think Stroud would be running for, would be running like a runaway slave every week too. And now the one, you know, the one thing I think with Houston is that, thank goodness that the, that D'Amico Ryans has basically just said, hey, my project for tonight is to find out who the offensive coordinator for the Houston Texans is, so I don't have to say.
Well, because, you know what? A white coach would have missed it. And that's what some people aren't considering. You know, ethnicities notwithstanding, sometimes a white coach is not going to look at a black athlete and gauge properly what they can and can't do. And sometimes if a guy is put into the fire and emerges, he may not even get the credit for it. Somebody might say, well, you know, his offensive line bailed him out. Or, well, he had a great receiver.
Yeah.
They will never say, this guy was smarter than the other guy. This guy read the defense and beat the guy clean. You know, even in the compliments, there is a viciousness. Exactly.
It's interesting. It's interesting you say that, Mike, because I caught, the NFL Network does a great job with their documentaries, you know, especially on the football life. And I watched a little bit of the one on Terrell Davis. And we all know his story, you know, seventh-round pick. But I didn't realize, I had forgotten about the fact that he and Ray Goff, his college coach, didn't get along. He actually tried to sabotage the kid along the way. But it was one of Denver's running back coaches that saw him play, and he went to, you know, he went beyond what Ray Goff was saying about him, and he went to someone else and said, you know, what's the deal with this guy? Oh, he's a beast. And see, I say all that to basically say we say it's the mantra of the black quarterback, but in many ways it's just the mantra of the black athlete. Even when you are at a certain peak and at a certain level, there's always somebody that always tries to illegitimize your ascent or your talent.
What would you take on Rob Wiley going to Anaheim?
I want to see, you know what, first of all, I want to see what the makeup of his staff is going to be. And also, I guess the biggest thing, we're going to have to see what this roster is going to be all about, and if they're going to if they're committed to rebuilding, completely, then it's okay. But if they still look at themselves as contenders and they think that he can make the difference, I got to see, because see, let's be honest. We know Otani's going to be gone, and there's also the possibility of Trout being gone. Now, if they're going to gut this roster, and they're going to commit to rebuilding, I think he'll be fine. But if they're going there thinking that we can just throw some money around and whatever, and we'll contend, he's gonna it's going to be tough. I'm glad that he's been given a second opportunity. So many guys like Willie Randolph and Bo Porter weren't given that second opportunity.
True.
I think he'll make the best of it. I think he'll make the best of it. At least I'm hoping that much.
Well, because the Anaheim, California Angels have never been one to rock the boat. That's why I've got to worry about it.
Well, it's again, it depends on the direction of what, you know, on the surface, when he got the job, I was like, okay, we'll see what happens. I want to see what the makeup of the, I want to see what other moves they're going to make. If they're just having him there as sort of a, if they're not, if the good way. If there's not a commitment to either rebuilding or if this way, I got to see what kind of game plan that the franchise is going to do here. Now,
right.
Artie Moreno's thing has been to throw money at everything. And it's gotten him exactly what he paid for. Nothing.
I want to make this point so that everybody understands the depth and breadth of the field general. We saw Patrick Mahomes come out of nowhere, and he went from who he to Super Bowl champion. You know, now you've got Mahomes, you got Jalen Hurts, you have Watson, you have these five or six guys who are legitimate. Now, a front office has to look at a guy and say, let's build the offense around this guy. Or let's build the team around this guy. When have they ever done that around a black player, ever, in football? We've seen it done in basketball with Michael Jordan and all that shit. But we've never seen it done in football as a six-man quarterback that spawns from a leadership standpoint.
Well, I think we're seeing that in – I think the two guys that you mentioned, Hurts and Mahomes, I think we're seeing it there.
Well, I think also, we're seeing Jackson and Baltimore.
Yeah. But it took them – they've done it now. They've done it recently, but, early on, even though Harbaugh was his biggest fan, I think they still really didn't know what they had in him.
They didn't.
You got to remember, they've beaten two first place. I mean, they've not only beaten two first place teams through the last 3 weeks, they thrashed them. I mean, they thrashed
Seattle.
Detroit. And, everybody's on the Detroit bandwagon, and rightfully so. But
they
opened up – but you know what? They opened up several cans of whoop-ass on them, and they had some other cans on standby just in case. The thing with Baltimore, I think that what's going to set them apart, I was actually kind of disappointed, and I understood why. I was kind of disappointed that they didn't at least think about trying to talk to Jonathan Taylor down in Indy. Because to me, if they signed Taylor, I would say, that would have been the missing link, because Jackson's already all the naysayers that keep trying to say he can't throw in the pocket, that's a lie. If you've been watching the season, that's a lie.
Yeah.
Look, over the years Baltimore has always been strong defensively. They're like okay defensively. They're not like dominant, they're not going to be like when they were those years.
Okay, if this got a solid offense.
Yeah. That the offense clearly carries this team now. There's no Eric Zier, Trent Dilfer, Mark Redmond, the defense is just basically saying, hold them till we get back on the field. Now the offense is saying, we'll hold them till you guys get back on the field now, at least. Yeah. The roles are clearly changed. The biggest thing with them is they have to prove, and this is probably going to have to be the year if they're going to do it. They've got to prove that they can beat the powers that be in the AFC, i.e. Kansas City.
True.
Because I think the one, and again, it's not an excuse, but again, it's just an observation. Because the season is so long now, and especially with Kansas City, I truly think at times they get kind of bored, sadly. And again,
they do because the league is now a gambler's league. They don't look at the game in terms of playing the game. They look at the league in terms of action. What's going to happen this week? Who's going to be the play? They don't think of it in terms of how is this guy's play going to affect the offense and go off that field off from there.
Yeah, because, the thing I didn't see the game. I just watched the highlights, and I apologize for that because I usually am good about watching the game, but it was interesting to see Miami and Kansas City. Now Kansas City went out to its customary big lead, and then Miami came back and they were able to hold off and what have you. The thing is, especially with the way the playoffs are now and how it literally becomes like the NBA in a sense during the playoffs where every possession really counts.
Yeah.
Because of that team speed that Miami has and there is a balance, Miami's going to be a team you're going to have to deal with. I know that they've struggled the last couple of weeks because I think, Philly beat up on them and Kansas City, beat up on them again. But that being said, the reason why I would lean more towards them is because they're more balanced. Because I think the window for Buffalo has been closed shut.
Buffalo.
I am so glad because they get Benjamin. These people do not want to give up on Allen. Allen is not that good.
The boy. Please wait. I'll say this. If they had shown some balls and gone after a Taylor, I think it would be a different story. But see, they still want him to be their Lord and Savior, and therein lies the problem. Put it this way. Basically, Josh Allen is Dan Marino without the Super Bowl credentials.
There you go.
Without the Super Bowl credentials.
He's Dan Marino without Super Bowl tickets. He's always been hyped, and he came in with a bad reputation because at Wyoming, he distanced receivers. And I know Stephon Diggs will never say it, but he probably thinks his quarterback ain't shit because a quarterback is supposed to always look out for their wide receivers. You don't get that feeling with Allen.
No.
Zay Jones and Gabe Davis, none of those guys. You never hear them talk about them. They'll talk about Duncan Knox because he's the white tight end, but they never talk about those receivers. And Diggs is a world-class receiver.
And also, there's a phrase and it's more of a basketball phrase than anything else, where they say a guy plays hero ball.
Yeah.
And Josh Allen is the ultimate hero ball because
he does that. Yes,
he literally tries to win the game all by himself. Doesn't realize that you have to have, look, until they really, you know, even those, one of the reasons why those Bills teams of the 90s will get their respect is because they were a balanced thing. Jim Kelly
That's
knew
right.
he couldn't win without Thurman Thomas and Andre Reed and Bruce
right.
Smith and all that. No, they didn't win the Super Bowls, but they, but see, they even
but they got
those
there.
Four,
they got
those
there.
Four, those four Super Bowl losses did more than anything that Josh Allen and them have done. Because remember,
right.
they've been anointed. Remember when they, you know, remember last year after opening night, where basically they were handed the Lombardi after beating the Rams.
Yes, they were.
But then they wound up losing at home to the Bengals. And remember, that game probably shouldn't have been in Buffalo because of the unfortunate thing that happened with Hamlin. But see, they basically got a home game handed to them, and they still couldn't do it right.
Yeah, you had one job.
And who's to say if Tua hadn't been hurt that they beat Miami?
The Buffalo Buffalo is on the way down because of all the things that you said. If we had to take them before court, seriously, Miami has whooped that ass. New England, they whooped that ass. It's nothing else because of Belichick. The Jets are a joke. But even the Jets can give Buffalo a fight.
Remember, they beat them opening night.
Yeah, they did. 22-16.
And the same thing with A-Bear in L.A. A-Bear.
I'll say this. I think even with all the bad commercials and what have you, I think Herbert's not caught up in his own whatever, unlike
right.
Josh Allen. I think Josh Allen, I think Josh Allen definitely smells himself.
I think the biggest problem
with them is that head coach.
Yeah,
Brandon Staley must have pictures of the Spanos family and some unshored deer. That's my only reason. I don't know why he still has his job.
I heard that. But yes.
Yeah.
But this is also why the field generals are so important, because you.